You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Today here we're here with Trish Jordan and other folks with Red Lodge Transition Services. How you doing, Trish?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for being on here. And I know you have some other great folks also involved with Red Lodge. And but first, can you talk a little about what you do, and then we can kind of get into all the great work everybody's doing.
Yeah, Red Lodge is a nonprofit organization. We founded in 2006 and received our 501c3 in 2007. We're a native-led organization. We serve 13 out of 14 state prisons and two jails with cultural programming. And a lot of our volunteers are also religious service program providers, so we have quite a few folks within the prison system that helps to bridge prison with community. We believe that reentry starts upon the first day that somebody enters the system, and in order to be successful, people have to have the right tools and the right support system. That's what we try and do, is reduce, that's our mission, to reduce recidivism among Native American people, and we're doing that.
That's great. You want to present some of the other folks we have on with us today?
Yeah, we have two of our board members on the call today, Mabel Jackson and Ed Edmo. I'm going to go ahead and let Mabel just give a shout out to everybody. I do want to shout out to CRCI, Coffee Creek, OSP, Mill Creek, Sandy Am, OSCI. I know you guys can hear us today, and any of the other institutions that are picking us up, you know, we love you, we care about you, we're praying for you. And we're doing things different. And I'm going to let Mabel talk about what's going on up at Deer Ridge, which is just outside of Madras, Oregon.
Hello, my name is Mabel, and I'm a volunteer for Deer Ridge Correction Facility. I'm one of the Native American volunteers there. I'm also a volunteer for Red Lodge. I used to be a client, and today I'm a volunteer. So being able to make this connection with our brothers and sisters is an amazing blessing to give back and to be able to do this work. At Deer Ridge, we're weekly Skypes with the circle, with the men in our circle. And I really appreciate that piece with them, and they practice social distancing. So they have their seats all separated. And we actually just did some warrior down training. Trish had provided for us to be able, and white bison, and that helps us with our reentry. And for myself, I feel like the magic, the work, the miracles start within the walls, so that when our brothers and sisters are ready to come back out, they've got a little idea of the resources. They have a connection with us volunteers that go in there, and they know our faces, and we get to be a part of guiding them and helping them when they come home, when they're ready to get out. And that's what I get to do. And, you know, just being able to make that connection with them, and working with an amazing chaplain that works there at Deer Ridge, that keeps it positive for us, because he cares about our circle so much. That's Chaplain Ball.
Can folks talk a little bit about what culturally responsive and appropriate programming means with what Red Lodge does for Native identified people, and what is it that's unique about that, that, you know, again, is not something that other people inside necessarily are like accessing those resources, and why that's important?
Yeah, well culture is best practice, and what we find is that, you know, culture is everything. It's the food that we eat, it's how we dress, it's how we think, it's our value system, it just intertwines in our everyday thought process and how we were raised. And so to be able to bring in authentic cultural programming, that it's just so meaningful, it's what gets people through their time. And all the institutions have one annual event a year, and Red Lodge assists with 13 of the 14 prisons in helping coordinate that. So what we're able to do is bring in sacred foods. That's important, that's a blessing, that's kind of like communion. And dancing, we bring in community members that are dressed in regalia. We bring in the drum. The drum is known as the heartbeat of the people. For us, the dancing is sacred. Every step is a prayer. And to just come in and celebrate life, and also create this beautiful ceremony in regard to the dance and the elders, and in several prisons, we're able to bring in our children, which we feel is very, very important. So it's an annual event that takes months to plan, and it's what gets people through their time. They're for one day of the year, they can forget about where they are. And for most of the men's prisons, we bring in ribbon shirts that have been donated. We bring in shawls at the women's prison. We have the first food ceremony at the women's prison, where the San Nacho Longhouse people come down and do a traditional blessing for us.
It looks like we're also here with Ed. Ed, can we hear about some of the work that you're doing?
Yes, I'm Ed. I'm Shoshone, as well as Kong. That's Lao, I was a young boy. And I did that, so I did 50 months and 20 days, Oregon State Correction Institution. The number was 2454C. And I was the best, didn't have culture in the prison system. I was the best little JC, best little Toastmaster there was. Everything to learn, to better myself. If I had something like Red Lodge, I would have sweat with, because I was raised that way. And I got 11 days computation sentence by Governor McCall to get out for Christmas in 66. I personally thanked him for that. So I do sweats for the men, do classes for the women, because I know how it feels. Been in the hole once, you know, it's not a good feeling. I've been there, done that, you know. And I know how it is at Christmas time, you get one bag of candy from the chaplain. I know the rules, you know, of the penitentiary. The cops have one rule and the cons have another rule. I know that. I've been through it, you know. One could call me blanket ass, so I'll meet you on the ball diamond. Indian guy worked in the shack. He gave all the Indians bats and golf clubs. Didn't give the white guys anything. We met them and didn't have no weapons, so they backed down, you know, because we could have had a riot, you know. Things like that. I don't talk about that much, you know. So we controlled the handball court. That was our thing. My game was commissary. Game was chess. We played chess, so it was a commissary game. So pretty rough in there.
Folks, there's the recent impact of COVID on your particular programming, and of course it affects everyone who's incarcerated in general, and specifically the way that it affects folks of Native American heritage, and what's going on and on the ground right now, and how is that changing the work that you do? How is it changing the lives of the prisoners and their ability to practice Native traditions?
Well, it's been significant. we haven't been able to access prisons since March 13th. And for all of the prisons, you know, this is a huge issue as far as religious services, because we provide Native American religious services, and those are not something that you can just you know, get over the television or pick up a book and provide services. So for our volunteers not to be able to access the institutions, that is impacting this population tremendously. And because we can't go in now, what do we do? You know, how do we maintain that connection? And so we are working at getting some Skype and Zoom set up at some of the other prisons. Every prison is a little different as far as what they can accommodate. And then just sending in some inspirational words. We've been able to send some books to people. We're working on trying to come up with new donations or new funding so that we can send in even more books and just maintain the connection until we can come back in.
Do folks also want to speak to, you know, as well on the different impacts of COVID, and including, we're also at a pivotal moment where people are talking about, you know, defunding the police, and maybe where that discussion might be going to also help convince some defunding of the prison industrial complex, and how that also maybe relates to getting some people out because of COVID, and lessening the numbers of people being so congested inside these facilities.
When I was younger, I really hated the police. I was ready to slalom to Dallas 6 miles west of us. The police find any man drunk, they'd cuff him, push around, call you blanket ass, squaw fucker, and then they'd push you down the back seat, grab you by your heel, and drag you down your head to hit a bunch of stairs. And then, and cover night, you take a swing on them, add another charge called resisting arrest, put the cuffs on you, take them back, put the boots to you. You go to court, and then the judge give a high fine because he knew we needed you on the river to fish. Happened over and over again, I saw it. I really hated cops. In 66, they got out of the hole in Eugene, Oregon. Cops, remember what happened last night? I said, no, I said, you're doing pretty good. Then you throw your shirts in the booking officer's face. Everybody had younger, you know. I did that, you know. I had a good reason, you know. When I go Eastern Radio Second working, I don't go out at night by myself because I don't trust the cops, you know. So I don't, you know, they're really bad for me, you know, for a personal experience.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're going to see some changes, and change is hard, and budgets have been cut, everybody's budget's been cut, there's so much money that has been impacted through COVID that all programs are being cut, including our prisons, and, you know, how do we redistribute some of the money that is being spent on community corrections. We know it's not a sustainable, it's just not sustainable, and we need to put more money into prevention, mm-hmm. and reentry, and there's a lot of work being done on that right now. So mm-hmm. I'm very hopeful that we're gonna see some real positive changes from mm-hmm. all of this.
Yeah. For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. And we're here with folks from Red Lodge Transition Services, a nonprofit based in the Portland, Oregon metro area, supporting incarcerated and formerly incarcerated folks, specifically with the focus on Native women. And the impacts of COVID, and also where that's going with this pivotal moment with the movement to defund the police, and talking about police brutality. And one thing I think would be interesting to discuss is just that, you know, the larger movement recently is also a response or continuation of Black Lives Matter. And can we talk about how that relates to the whole, the Native experience and that similar history, right? Because the police started with being part of the slave patrolling, and how the police have always targeted Native Indigenous folks as well, and how that relates to recent incarceration and where you think that's going beyond the bars.
This country is founded on stolen land and built with slavery, and prisons weren't even really a thing until after slavery was abolished. And so a lot of people of color, primarily Black and Native American people, were incarcerated for minor offenses. Oh, you were looking lustfully at that white woman, or you drank out of the wrong fountain, or whatever accusation was made. Long sentences were given, and so slave labor was just transferred to our prisons. And I'm not saying people didn't, you know, do terrible things. I'm sure they did, but there was just a lot of inequity, which we still see a lot of inequity in our communities. So Red Lodge, you know, we stand with our brothers and sisters. Black lives do matter. And you know, we went through that at Standing Rock. We've been through it at Wounded Knee. We went through it the longest walk. In 1978, there was 11 bills in the House of Representatives and Congress, which would have abrogated all Indian treaties and taken away our water rights. So the struggle has never, it's really continuing. You know, it's 500 years for us, it's 400 years for our Black brothers and sisters, and we need to see some change. And when we see thousands and thousands and thousands of people of all colors, of all socioeconomic backgrounds, coming into the streets and saying no more, no more, you know, that's what's going to change this. And so I'm really hopeful that we're going to see some, and we are seeing it. I mean, there are things being done where, I guess lynching was still on the books, you know, in one of our states, and now that's been, you know, resolved. And there's just a lot of things that are being done at a state and a local level to try and reverse some of the inequity and the brutality that has been hanging over our communities for centuries.
In the 1980s, they had, I gave a talk before the city council to put shotguns in the cars. And I testified that I'm against it because the cavalry, you know what the cavalry did, they shoot people. I think we should have a special prosecutor prosecuting crimes of violence against dark people. I remember I used to be on the Human Rights Commission. Me and my wife got the Peyton Award in the 80s for working civil rights, and I think the Human Rights Commission should have some teeth in it, be right under the mayor. Because they don't answer, no one answers to them. They make findings and rules, and no one listens. They had to put teeth in that, because it started out really good, you know, in the 60s, in the Human Rights Commission. You know, so we should put some teeth into our, instead of growing around, put a bite, something in their bite, really bite hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much great work going on that people are doing outside in the community. People are in the streets and marching, and then for organizations like Red Lodge, doing really specific, unique work on the ground with providing residential housing and then doing the culturally specific programming inside. Where do you see that going? Where do you see it expanding? And also within the Portland area, but then maybe people who live around the country too, how can they support the work of Red Lodge and projects like what Red Lodge does for formerly incarcerated Native women and currently incarcerated people too?
Well, that's a lot.
By art, by Native American art. We had art.
Yeah, you can buy some Native American prison art project. You know, Yeah, that's a restorative justice project that came out of the prisons. And we have about 400 and some odd pieces of art. And we make calendars and cards and prints. And that money goes into the Women's Transition Center. I think that people just need, you know, educate yourself. Education is really important. And don't believe everything, you know, that you read. Do some research, put some effort into it, and really educate yourself on what we're going through right now, because we've got to make some changes, not just with the justice system and corrections. We've got to make some changes for the earth, otherwise we're not going to survive. And the earth just kind of put us in our place, you know, everything just stopped because the earth decided to stop us. And this virus is a part of global warming. It's a part of what we've done to the earth. It's a part of what we're doing to ourselves. And there's a real healing that needs to take place. And I think that, you know, I love the fact that people are like, you know, let's love each other. Let's be kind to each other. Let's take care of each other. Yes, let's do that. And hopefully, you know, address the inequities and the truth come out and that we become better people for it, and kinder people, and more show more gratitude for what it is that we're supposed to be doing in life. I did want Mabel to talk a little bit about what we're doing, because we had to shift how we do things.
Mm-hmm. Just muted.
Doing a program over at Madras that I was going to have her talk to you about.
Yes, we, again, I'm Mabel, and, you know, with this pandemic going on, you know, we have lost any kind of connection besides our Skypes, you know, that I've gotten with our brothers and our sisters, and being able to go in, and how important that is for our brothers and sisters. They, you know, when they go in within the prisons systems, they, you know, a lot of times we lose our identity because we're too busy doing the other things that don't keep us balanced with our Creator. And so we attend, when volunteers get this chance, Red Lodge gets this chance to go in, they adopt the different cultures, the different songs, the different sweat lodge, learning how to smudge, learning how to pray. We're learning how to do that all over again, you know. And now, you know, what I've seen is they have no family support, no visits, you know, and they don't get to see the volunteers like they normally do, and got comfortable seeing us at least once or twice, maybe sometimes three times a week. And, you know, for me, I feel like, you know, what I witness in today, right now, is a lot of mental health going on within our facilities, because they don't have that piece. They've gotten everything taken away from them to be able to help them talk about their fears. There's a lot of fear in there of getting this pandemic, you know, of this COVID-19. I know that a couple of our brothers have lost. One brother lost his mother, and there was no way that we could go in and smudge for him. There was no way we could go in, and we can pray virtually, but we can't go in and do the normal ceremony for him to help him get through this and let his mom go through this journey. So, you know, the deaths that happen while they're incarcerated, and the mental health that happens to them without having anybody to talk to or reach out to. And you'd ask about what could others do, and it would be great, you know, it would be great if we could, they have a White Bison, that Well Variety, they have a 12-step program. If we could get some time, some slots open to be in training, you know, we just did some Warrior Down training for White Bison, which was great. That helps us with our reentry. But the work, like I said, goes in behind the walls, you know, and it would be good if we could do virtual 12-step, you know, meetings with them, or even get the training to do 12 steps, you know, that, because you have to have a certificate to run this besides AA or NA or Al-Anon, you know, or Celebrate Recovery. We'd like to be able to make sure they stay connected with their culture And that's where the Warrior Down training comes, or the 12-step comes in, the medicine wheel, the mending broken hearts, and that's White Bison. And those trainings cost a lot of money to go to attend, but they're starting to do them virtually. And it would be great if we could do that, and then we'd be certified to be able to train, you know, spend an hour or two with our brothers doing the step work. And for me, I feel that that's really important because it helps them continue wanting to change, and they're going for a goal like a certificate. So when they get out, they have something to show, you know, show proof. Because, you know, one of our brothers that had gotten out, they weren't even going to let him with housing. They weren't even going to help him with housing, you know, because of his crimes. And so what do we do? You know, I'm grateful that we get to, I got to be a courtesy ride, and I'm grateful that I got to meet our two brothers at the gate. And the first thing we did was we smudged and we prayed together, because I feel like that's the first connection with them, is who's going to pick them up? Are you going to have someone healthy with you? Are you going to still carry these, make sure they have their medicines? You know, donating medicines is really important. So that we can gift our brothers and sisters within the facilities or outside the facilities, being able to make sure they can have that connection. But I'm also, you know, I got that chance to pray, but then one of our brothers, he went another direction and had a ride. And then I got to have this chance to connect with the other by making sure he got to his probation. And that's that reentry piece that we get to do, Red Lodge gets to do.
Great. Thanks so much for sharing, folks. For further information and follow up with Red Lodge, check Red Lodge out, get in touch, get involved. Please, you know, donate to them, help them out. And that is at redlodgetransition.org. Again, that's redlodgetransition.org. And you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Big thanks again to Red Lodge Transition Services. That's redlodgetransition.org. Big thanks to all of our guests and our engineers. Free them all.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned. KBOO.